Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is February 19th, 2019. We have six cases on our calendar for today, and five of them are set for oral argument. This is the first of those five. Case number A18-0968, Patricia Marquardt. Is that how you pronounce it?
Marquardt.
Versus James Schaffhausen. Schaffhausen et al. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes for respondents for arguments, and then you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose. Looks like we might have some students here joining us as well, I believe. Welcome. And it's pretty much a packed gallery that we have here today. So, counsel, when you approach the podium, you can adjust it upwards or downwards. There's a button underneath on the bottom side there. And when you begin, please state your name for the record and the party you're representing. And with that, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel. I can't find your button. That's it. My name is Richard Thomas.
It's being recorded, so if you can, there you go.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, my name is Richard Thomas. I'm here representing Dr. James Schaffhausen and his group, Twin City Orthopedics. At least since 1936, following the Yates decision, a bedrock of medical negligence law has been the following concept. A physician is not liable for that which he did not cause, and that which would have occurred through the normal events of the underlying disease process. Put another way, a physician is liable only for that which he does cause and is not liable for that which he does not cause. Our first argument this morning is that we are entitled to judgment as a matter of law, because in this case, no expert witness testified that the pre-existing infection that the respondent had resulted in any brain injury as a result of something other than the infection or the need to treat the infection. Put another way, the intervening surgery, whether one agrees it should or should not have been done, is not what caused the infection, is not what caused the need to address the infection. The question then becomes, given the two competing diagnoses that the respondent presented, and that in and of itself is interesting, a succeeding medical negligence case without an actual diagnosis is something unique in my experience.
What do you mean? Can you clarify that, please?
Yes, I can. It is not clear, even today, whether the plaintiff had ADEM, and I'm going to say it one time. It is acute disseminated encephalomyelitis, or posterior reversible encephalopathy syndrome. They are very different things. Their expert witness, Dr. Stark, said, "I don't know which of those two diagnoses she has." Their other expert witness, Dr. Stefan, said, "I rely upon the neurologists to tell me because I do not separately diagnose either condition." They argued two theories. It doesn't matter which she has. They are both the result of the negligence of Dr. Schaffhausen.
Well, you can certainly argue two different theories of liability.
Clearly can. And that's why we have to address them separately. Your Honor.
Isn't there testimony in the record that the infection could have been treated more easily and most likely without complication if the surgery had not been done?
Great question.
So in that regard, does it matter what the diagnosis was?
It does. And the actual, if you read the record, and Dr. Stefan is their infectious disease expert, and he's the only one who testified about whether or not the infection would have been more difficult to treat because you had to use vancomycin to address it, whether the surgery made that more difficult. And his answer was, very specifically, that the use of vancomycin was not made more difficult. They didn't have to use more vancomycin. They had to use the same dose whether surgery had occurred or not. But in terms of the ADEM, and I need to address that separately, their theory was that the spread of the infection resulting from the surgery is what triggered the ADEM. ADEM is an autoimmune reaction to an infection. It is not triggered by a spread of infection. The worst you can say about this surgery is that it spread the infection. And we have a great argument about that, but for the purpose of this appeal, I'm going to assume that's the case. So then the question is, if the infection spread as a result of the surgery, did it trigger ADEM? No one said that. No one said that. No one testified to that. On page 28 of their brief, they say that both Dr. Stark and Dr. Stefan said the spread of the infection is what triggered the ADEM. Remarkable about that statement is two things, and it's said twice on page 28. What's remarkable about that is there isn't a single citation to the testimony in the record to support that citation, because it was never said. And it was never said for a variety of reasons. Number one, it's not medically sound. An autoimmune reaction is not triggered by spread. It's triggered by a reaction to the infection itself. And that was the great hurdle that the plaintiff had to get over and didn't get over because no expert testimony was presented. Now, on the issue of press, the ADEM is dealt with fairly simply and directly. No physician has indicated that the spread of the infection, which is what would have occurred because of the surgery, the spread is the trigger. No one said that. And so if the theory is ADEM, it fails on that cause. If the theory is posterior reversible encephalopathy syndrome, that's different. That results from a hyperperfusion of fluid into the brain, crossing the blood-brain barrier, causing this symmetrical lesion in the posterior aspect of the brain. That's what that is caused by. It's caused by hyperperfusion, not the spread of infection. No one argued that because they are unrelated concepts. The question there is, was the use of vancomycin, which resulted in kidney failure, and with kidney failure, in fact, she had extremely high blood pressures. Is that the result of the surgery? And everybody testified that it is not. Dr. Stark didn't tell us because he doesn't treat with vancomycin. And Dr. Stefan said specifically it is not. Now, what well, Dr.
That,
Stark...
I just want to make sure I understand
sure.
the record correctly.
Please.
I understand that he said something, close to that on cross, but didn't he reaffirm kind of then on redirect?
Which person, Your
Honor? Dr.
Stefan?
Yes.
No. What he said on redirect, in terms of the vancomycin.
Right.
Yeah, right. He never said that. Give me your question again. What do you think he affirmed on redirect? Because what he told me, as I recall, and I redirected him twice, is that the surgery is not the problem associated with the vancomycin. What the problem with the vancomycin is, and this is where they tried to get it in with Dr. Stark, he said if it had been properly monitored, it could have been stopped before it got to a toxic level. That was his theory.
And that goes, I'm just trying to make sure I track this to kind of the third.
That was with Stark,
right.
Not with Stefan. Okay. Now, can he say that? Okay. Can he say that? Sorensen says this. A conclusion without proper foundation is not admissible and does not support a verdict. Now, the conclusion, so then when we ask him, do you know what the standard of care is for monitoring vancomycin? He said, I do not know. More importantly, and this goes directly to cause, if it had been monitored differently, can you tell us when it would have been toxic? Because that's the key. If you can't say that in monitoring it would have not been toxic, can you tell me when it would have been toxic had it been monitored in the way you're arguing? No, I can't. So there's no evidence in this case that if the vancomycin had been monitored differently, that the trigger for the kidney failure and the hypertension would not have occurred. In fact, the one person who does know about this is Dr. Stefan, and he tells us the standard of care for vancomycin is you give it in the hospital, you do a level in 48 hours, which was done, it was perfectly acceptable, you do a second level in 7 days, which was done, and it was discovered it was toxic. What's missing in the record is, when did that happen? Was that on day 7? Was that on day 5? Was that on day 4? No one knows. And so there's absolutely no evidence here that the use of vancomycin, which was necessary because of the pre-existing MRSA, wouldn't have resulted in exactly the same thing, not because surgery occurred, but because this person had a sensitivity to vancomycin that falls into the category that others have who have this infection and get this rare complication. So those two...
Excuse me, I'm going back to something you said earlier, which relates to the vancomycin treatment that you're just talking about. I think you said that the same dose would have been required whether or not surgery occurred.
Correct.
Where in the record would I find that? Because I was searching for testimony relating to whether vancomycin treatment would have been required.
Yes, Dr. Stefan says that specifically.
I
don't have the page number, Your Honor. Forgive me. But I can tell you, if you read his cross-examination, he will tell you that the dose, in fact, neither Stark nor Stefan nor anyone indicates that the dose would have been different. And in fact, Dr. Stefan says specifically that the spread of infection doesn't change how, and he said this specifically, it doesn't make it more difficult to treat. So you use the same medication at the same level to treat the pre-existing MRSA infection.
But there was testimony by Dr. Stark that had this infection been treated, had the surgery not gone forward and the infection instead been treated right away, that on page 59 of the transcript it says the alternative treatment of going in and washing it out with an arthroscope, doing the culture and washing it out with an arthroscope, that could have treated this successfully, or 90 to 95% successfully without complication.
Right, and that question is then, by washing out, could have, of course, isn't more likely than not, so that doesn't meet our legal standard. Secondly, the way, and does Dr. Stark even have the testimony to address infectious disease? He has never, ever ordered vancomycin. He has never, ever treated an infection. In fact, he's never diagnosed nor treated ADEM or PRESS.
Well, now you're talking about the
I'm talking about another argument.
Expert, yeah.
But on this issue of cause, search as you might, you will not find anybody who links up all of the elements, the chain of causation, on either the PRESS theory or on the ADEM theory to get to cause, entitling us to judgment as a matter of course. I just need to talk about a couple of things quickly because I'm running out of room here. One of them is Kornfeld. No one testified in this case. The person who actually came up with a diagnosis of ADEM, Dr. Boylan, never testified. So what we have here is a highly controverted issue. And Kornfeld says when it's a highly controverted issue, it is no longer an exception to the hearsay rule, what's put in the medical record. That person has to come in and testify. This couldn't have been more controversial, and it couldn't have been a more central issue in the case. And Kornfeld says it then becomes hearsay, and it is not substantive issue evidence on the point. They didn't call her because, as we point out in the brief, there's a lot of reasons that testimony was changed, and it was changed. It was changed on March 4th of 2012, and it was never changed back. She doesn't have ADEM, but regardless, we are entitled, if for nothing else, for a new trial on that point, because the essential diagnosis of ADEM was established only through hearsay testimony. Now, to say, well, 9 other people adopted it or mentioned it, Nine other physicians didn't make the diagnosis. Nine other physicians made reference to the fact that Dr. Boylan made the diagnosis, and that diagnosis was changed. That, I think, is a very key point.
Even if that was error, isn't it not prejudicial? Because, as you stated, that diagnosis was indeed changed, and in fact, even Dr. Stephan changed it in his own notes, correct?
It was, but what was vigorously argued at the end of this case is that she had ADEM based upon the diagnosis of Dr. Boylan. So the jury, as we talked earlier, was presented with two alternative theories. And the whole emphasis in this case was ADEM. Let us be clear on that, which gets to the other argument about counsel's final argument. And using a misstatement about Dr. Farace.
Well, that's not uncommon for people to mess up the terms and I mean, especially when you've got a lot of technical terms.
I think the
district court statement on that was pretty good in terms of what you hear and what you actually read in the transcript.
Let's remove any nefarious intent. Okay? Let's take that away. Let's say it was as innocent as can be. It is nevertheless highly prejudicial because it is the only way you can link press to the spread of an infection. If the jury concludes that Dr. Farace is right, that she has press, you cannot conclude cause unless you adopt that argument, that the spread of the infection resulted in sepsis, resulted in perfusion, that caused press. It wasn't a simple misstatement. It was a profound and necessary argument to connect up the alternative diagnosis. It is not benign, even though I'm done.
You're out of time, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, counsel. What you have just heard, the argument. My name is Douglas Schmidt, and I'm the attorney for the respondent. I get a little excited here. The argument that you've just heard is an argument that should have and was addressed at the trial level.
Well, I think what the argument that I'm hearing is that we're missing a causal link, and one of the things that a plaintiff has to prove is that there's a standard of care is breached, and that breach of the standard of care directly caused the injury. And as I read your brief, it seems like you're conceding that there actually is no testimony that has the direct link, but rather there's an inference, a reasonable inference, that can be made based on the testimony.
I think there's direct evidence, and
what evidence is there specifically directly linking? Because as I read the testimony, I saw them opining on what could happen, but I don't see any opinion saying that Dr. Schaffhausen, his actions directly caused her brain injury through a specific causal chain of actions.
Judge Cochran directed, I think, us to that linkage. Dr. Stark very clearly indicated in his testimony that this MRSA was confined to the knee joint. He made a big point about how it was confined to the knee joint.
What evidence is there that it was indeed confined to the knee joint then? Because if I recall, if it was a staph infection or sepsis, usually it's the lungs, kidneys, blood system, and I think that there's a fourth one. I always forget the fourth one. And he also testified with 100% certainty, which for me is a red flag, because you never have 100% certainty in the medical field. But how do we know, what evidence is there that it actually was just only localized to the knee?
I wish that I would have had that question a day or so ago so that I could dig through the record that would be a concern. I recall there was testimony that the infection was definitely confined within the knee joint, and whether that was by MRI, And whether it was from their expert or ours, it's clearly there if we dig deep enough. Dr. Stark's testimony was that it was confined to the knee joint, and I think it was supported by objective evidence. He then said that with 90 to 95% certainty, this infection could have been treated conservatively. And he then said, with 90 to 95% certainty, question at page 60, would that course of treatment, the conservative treatment, have avoided all, and I underline the word, all of the consequences that I have described that ended up happening with her extended course of treatment with brain damage, with multiple operations, et cetera? And he responded, there is a much, much higher chance that this would all have been avoided if she had had the simple conservative approach at the beginning with a proper diagnosis, arthroscopic debridement, close monitoring by infectious disease, and then goes on as...
But didn't all that occur, though, in this situation? I mean, there was monitoring. She went through, and he, Dr. Stark even testified that she was monitored for the vancomycin. I assume that's the treatment that you're talking about. They do that testing. It's done three. They do the testing before, and she had the test done with the trout to see what the level was to make sure that she was stable, and that's the normal procedure, right? And then she was released after that, and then she was monitored when, after it was, she was released. So it wasn't like she was just let go, and that's it. And in terms of, I'm sorry, you had a comment.
I want to remind the court that there were four negligence theories that were all supported.
Yes, we're well aware of it. We've read the briefs, so go ahead.
Yeah, and there were two causation theories, and there were four medical experts, and the choices that this jury had were 4 × 2 = 8 × 4 = 32, and
not
any one.
I think there, and let's put aside the standard of care because you put a lot of emphasis on that, but. I think really the issue is causation, because even if we assume that the standard of care was breached, you still have to have that causal link.
Dr. Stark testified that the infection was confined to the knee joint.
Okay.
Now, you raised the issue of whether there was objective proof. His testimony stood. That you are to adopt the evidence in the light most favorable to the jury's verdict. He testified it was confined to the joint. He and Stefan testified that the cutting and the sawing sent this infection into the bloodstream, that it went from the bloodstream to the brain, and it caused ADM.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Sorry.
So, and this is my central question for you, if I may, Mr. Smith. It's you, and I'm looking at, and what you're saying is reflected, I think, at pages 27 to 28, kind of your brief, kind of where you're talking about the central issue of causation with the ADM. But there you have to pair Stark and Dr. Stark's and Stefan's expert testimony together with Dr. Boyan's diagnosis, correct? And if that's correct, which is what you do, and that gets to my concern that isn't this diagnosis of Dr. Boyan's, isn't that a highly controversial opinion that goes to the central issue, at least for one of your causation theories?
Judge McGill was absolutely right in his decision about that issue. Kornfeld, and he comments in his order that Kornfeld and Scoggin are being misinterpreted by the defense. In medical malpractice cases, you definitely need have a different standard for an expert to testify as to the standard of care, the negligence, than you do for the causation. And Kornfeld makes a very clear point. The diagnosis in Kornfeld was halothane...
Hepatitis. Yes.
And in the Scoggin case, it was poisoning due to insect poisoning exposure. Now, the diagnosis itself is not subject to that high degree of evidentiary foundation. It's the standard of care, the negligence part of it. If, in fact, Dr. Boylan's diagnosis had read ADEM caused by the spread from the knee infection? Yes. But then what would the court have done? They would have eliminated caused by, and the diagnosis of ADEM would still stand. And therefore, we have an evidentiary record that supports a causal link. And I submit that if we go, if I were given time to go through the other four theories and discuss them with the ADEM and the press choices,
but
that
counsel, the appellant's counsel pointed out that there isn't any testimony by either expert saying that ADEM was caused by the surgery.
Oh, I think there was. I think that Dr. Steffen very clearly testified in that regard, and I think Dr. Stark did as well.
Where? Can you please point in the record where? Because I had trouble finding that. In fact, it was the lack of that that troubled me more than anything else.
I had trouble finding that as well.
Well, at page 56
of
Dr. Steffen's testimony, his deposition testimony, okay, you've given the opinion to reasonable medical certainty that you believe that her brain damage, her blindness, her ADEM was caused by the systemic blood infection in this case. And he had previously testified in the direct examination that, in his opinion, the cutting and the sawing had spread the infection into the systemic blood system, and it had gone systemic to the brain, and it caused the ADEM. Their witness, Felice, they tried to ride the press horse here, and even their witness, Felice, on cross-examination, admitted, and one of our theories was...
Before you go to the press, though, I want to go back to the ADEM.
Yeah.
Because isn't that an autoimmune reaction that the body has to... And I may be confusing it now as well, but... So I just want to make sure we're clear.
I submit to you that the argument that's being made here is being made for the first time about autoimmune is being made for the first time on appeal. And I ask you to go to page...
Is that something that you mentioned in your brief? Because I don't recall that argument being made.
I'm not sure that it's there in the brief.
Okay.
At page 27, they highlight their causation argument in bold language. What is missing, they say, from the trial evidence is any testimony...
27 of what?
27 of the appellant's original brief.
Okay, thank you.
And they highlight in bold... the language that is the crux of their argument. What is missing from the trial evidence is any testimony that ADEM is triggered by the spread of infection rather than the body's own autoimmune reaction to the MRSA infection. And then on the next page, in stark contradiction, they say, as noted, multiple physicians testified at trial that ADEM is caused by the body's autoimmune reaction to an infection.
Wasn't it undisputed that there was a pre-existing infection?
I don't think there's any question, but when she came into the hospital for that surgery that morning, already having MRSA, it didn't develop in the 3 days, 2 or 3 days between the surgery and the culture coming back. The testimony is everybody agreed that the green tinged fluid, the synovial fluid that should be pale yellow was indication of the MRSA. They raised the question in defense as to whether he should have recognized that fact, and that was hotly disputed. There was green tinged necrotic dead tissue. Necrotic means dead in that joint. No question she came in. And as Judge McGill acknowledges, our theory was, our primary theory, again, One of the four that we introduced evidence on was that the cutting and the sawing, rather than closing it up right now and treating it conservatively, was the cause of everything that happened after she left the hospital.
Can you go to the, you only have a couple of minutes left, can you go to the press argument as well? Because that one, I think, is even more tenuous than the ADM one. In terms of the causal link, I want to focus on the causal link, not the standard of care.
Okay. Again, our fourth negligence theory was that she was discharged with a kidney, with abnormal kidney function, with a kidney failure, and put on vancomycin, which
was there was any highly question that when she was discharged that her vancomycin levels were appropriate?
I think there was, and we've cited that in our brief.
But the testimony from Dr. Stark, from both of them, is that they, that, well, from Dr. Steffen, is that he defers to the experts on, actually both of them said they defer to the experts in terms of vancomycin treatment.
Well,
and the testing, the record shows that the testing was done according to how it's normally done, where you look at the peak and you look at the trough, and when you look at the trough, you make sure it's within the level, and at that point, the person is more or less stabilized on the vancomycin treatment, correct?
Well, if I could set that aside for a second and talk about what their expert, their infectious disease expert, said. On cross-examination, he admitted that vancotoxicity only occurs in 5% of the cases.
Right.
And people almost always recover without any brain damage. He also indicated that, testified that over 50% of the people that do get vancotoxicity already have another problem, in many cases, a kidney problem. And there was evidence in this record that our claim was she should not have been discharged. She was discharged with an abnormal kidney function. She came in to that surgery with a pre-op report that it was abnormal kidney function, and their witness, by the testimony in cross-examination, conceded basically that the failure to monitor and
She was being monitored. In not when she was went home. Oh yeah, she was. How was she not monitored?
Oh, I'm glad you asked me that question. This lady was sent home from the hospital with an infected TKA knee joint and no monitoring whatsoever for 1 week. She was met at home in Superior by a nurse, a home nurse, who showed her how to...
Didn't Dr. Stefan testify, though, that that's what he would have done in the same situation, that there was no breach of the standard of care? I think the testimony from him, Dr. Stark, were in contrast to each other on that point, weren't they?
I don't recall that. I recall it differently, that Stefan was critical of her being sent home as she was, and I think
Dr. Stark definitely was, no question.
Well,
there,
but I think Stefan was too, that she should have been sent directly into the hands of a receiving doctor up in the Duluth Superior area.
Can you point me to the record? I mean, we have to have something in the record to support the theories.
Well, if you wanted to give me 5 or 10 minutes to dig it out.
No, actually, you're over time already. So,
thank you,
counsel.
May it please the court and counsel. I want to go through some of these points as they were made. There, in response to your question, Judge Cochran, did Dr. Stark say that conservative therapy would have avoided all of these things? And counsel just read it to you from page 60. And what he said was, there's a higher chance. A higher chance is not more likely than not. A higher chance just, it doesn't reach the causation standard. So as a matter of law, if you have a 1% chance, and then because of this you now have a 5% chance, you have a higher chance, but that doesn't meet the standard of care. To your point, Judge Jessen, under Kornfeld, I couldn't agree with you more, obviously. This is a highly contended issue. And under Kornfeld, it doesn't matter that you're talking about cause, you're talking about diagnosis. And the diagnosis here was highly controverted. And I had a lot of questions for Dr. Boylan. It's interesting. The one person who makes the diagnosis is the one person he does not call. And when I tried to take the deposition of their other treating physician, Dr. Farace, who, by the way, is not my expert, it's her doctor, they brought a motion for protective order. So Dr. Boylan, that becomes hearsay. And when it is hearsay, it is not admissible. The patient, I want to be crystal clear on this. Doctor, it's all through their brief, at least several times, that she was discharged with an abnormal GFR of 45. She was not. The GFR of 45 was obtained by Dr. Riesdorf, who was the physician who was doing the monitoring with the group after she left the hospital. That 45 GFR was never provided to Dr. Schaffhausen. And incidentally, if it was so abnormal, why didn't Dr. Riesdorf say something about it? And to your point, Judge Reyes, your memory is spot on. Dr. Stefan was not critical of how she was monitored on the vancomycin after she was discharged. She had normal trough levels, and when you establish that in the hospital with two troughs before discharge, and then she is discharged, the standard of practice is to do another trough in 7 days. And that is exactly what was done, and that's when it was determined that her vanco levels were sky high. And that's when we knew there was toxicity. In fact, it was done twice, if you remember. And it was going up exponentially.
Right, it was like 90-something.
And then it zoomed up even higher. So that's when we know that there is a problem. And that problem resulted because she was on vancomycin, not because of any surgery. What was just read to you of what Dr. Stefan said, and this is critically important, and nobody, the defense is not arguing this. He said the infection caused the ADEM. No question about it. The infection caused the ADEM because the infection is an autoimmune reaction, or the ADEM is an autoimmune reaction to the infection. In that sense, if you don't have the infection, you don't have the autoimmune reaction. That's not the question here. The question here is, did the surgery aggravate that, even if we assume that the surgery resulted in spread? And nobody said it. Stefan didn't say it. Stark didn't say it. Nobody said it. There's a big hole in the case.
Though, if we take your approach there,
yes,
maybe we wouldn't have to reach it, but then that doesn't make Dr. Boland's testimony is going to the ultimate issue, because it's just the diagnosis. So that's not what we should be, so we shouldn't be as troubled by that part.
I agree with that. If you agree with what I just said, then the Boylan thing becomes moot. I agree with that. It doesn't matter if she had ADEM if you can't connect ADEM to the surgery. You're absolutely right about that. But if somebody, and I don't know how you're going to read this record, if you read it like I read it, that's not a problem. If you read it the way Mr. Schmidt reads it, then ADEM is a problem, because that's their road to recovery. And then it becomes a problem. But not if you accept the argument I've just made. I agree with that.
In terms of causation?
Yes.
Okay.
I have 22 seconds left, and I want to make one more point. The medical bills should not have been admitted without testimony they were related to the malpractice. I think everybody agrees with that, but they were admitted anyway. And acute, an autoimmune reaction is not a new argument. It's been present from the first day. Thank you.
Thank you both, counsel. It was very well argued and very well briefed. We appreciate that. We'll be issuing an order within the 90-day statutory time frame. Thank you. The next case on our calendar is A18-1299, Integrity Insurance Company versus First Dakota Indemnity Company.